Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a Gibson's Bookstore podcast. I'm Ryan, my pronouns are she, her.
I'm Joe, my pronouns are they, them.
I'm Sam, my pronouns are she, her.
Hi Sam!
Hi Sam!
Welcome
another
back!
October.
Another October, another horror book discussion.
Ooh, and this one's coming out on Halloween!
Spooky.
Happy Halloween, y'all.
I'm just singing that line around the house.
I honestly, same.
Yeah. I tried to make it the only song that got played at the party last night.
It didn't
work out.
I appreciate the effort. Yeah. That is excellent. There's a house near my in-laws where we go trick-or-treating, and they have a giant Oogie Boogie outside of their house every Halloween. And so we drove by it the other day. And my youngest, Fina, was like really into it, but hasn't seen Nightmare Before Christmas yet. And so I was like, oh, that's Oogie Boogie. And she was just like so confused.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was like, okay, you know how we have that ghost dog whose name is Zero? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, they're from the same movie. And she's like, what?
I'm three.
I do love when a child becomes emotionally attached to a character from something they should not, like, can't watch yet or whatever. Was it one of our coworkers? I think their kid got really attached to a stuffed Cthulhu doll.
That's incredible.
That
it's incredible when children
be like, one day, you're going to be questioning my parenting.
So, anyway, we love Nightmare Before Christmas. How's it going, guys?
Good. It's been a good spooky season.
It has been a pretty good spooky season.
It's spooky season.
Indeed. Doing a lot of spooky things.
Yeah.
Watching lots of horror movies. I've been trying to only read horror novels this month, which is not that different from every other month, but I started a romance novel and then paused it because I was like, wait, I don't want to finish this in October. I want all of my October books to be spooky, so I put that aside.
I think that's fair. Yeah. I was trying to, like, make my list of things I'm currently reading, and I was like, no, I'll save that for the main part, because, like, it's mostly horror.
Yeah. I have not, I'll be honest, I've not read much since our last episode.
Fair.
I was looking through my story graph and I was like, did I only finish two books but we recorded at the end of September.
And honestly, I was saved by the fact that I held back a little on that episode.
That's
because
true.
I didn't want to scare our friends from Shadow of All Graves.
That's fair. That's fair. Although they don't scare easily.
No, they don't. Ha ha.
But yeah, I have not read much, although I am currently reading a billion things, so you know that.
I feel like that's the state I'm in right now. Like I'm probably like six books, but like just slowly inching through each one.
Yeah. I read a chapter at a time and then I pick up the next one. Yeah. I read a chapter, pick up the next one.
That upsets some people when I tell them that. Like I will like read, I'll have three books next to me and like read a chapter, put that one down, read a chapter, put that down. Mm-hmm. And people will be like, that's, get away from me. Like
that's the Emily Russo style of reading.
Oh,
Emily Russo, who co-owns Print, at one point was reading, I don't think I'm exaggerating, 100 books simultaneously.
Oh my goodness.
Because
I couldn't do that.
She literally would pick one up, read a chapter, put it away, pick the next one up, read a chapter, put it away, and it was just this endless rotation. And then when she finished one, she would just add another one from her TBR.
I just feel like I couldn't keep track of that.
Well, that's what she did say, it wasn't sustainable for very long, but she did do it. And she still reads that way. She just has, I think she said now it's like 40 something instead of 100.
Down
still a lot.
Oh my God.
So I can do like six tops.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do about six.
Yeah.
And
actively.
For me at least, it tends to help if they're different genres or even like fiction and nonfiction.
Yep.
Like,
sure,
I can read a play and a nonfiction book and a fiction book, but like if I'm trying to read four horror novels at a time, I can't keep them straight.
That's fair. I don't know. I think it's the ADHD in my brain that I'm like, oh, right, this is the one about this. Like, the context clues, I'm like, all right, there we go.
I just feel like there'll be, like, something that'll remind me of a different book. I'm like, I'm going to read that now. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And also, like, that. Feel like my, like, if I don't, like, give myself, like, get to the end of this chapter, that's a goal.
Yeah.
Or else I'll just, like, be staring off in space for the whole night. You know what
I mean? Yep. Yeah, but I did, it's interesting, I did DNF a few books, and I don't even remember what they were, and it wasn't, and it wasn't because they were bad or anything, but I'm very much a mood reader.
Yeah.
And man, it was hard this month to figure out what I was in the mood for.
Yeah.
I just couldn't settle on anything. And until I finally, I went to NEBA and that helped.
Yeah.
Because at NEBA, there were reps handing me things being like, Ryan, you specifically will love this. And I was like, you are correct. And so that helped a lot. Well, yeah, we've been to NEBA since
we have.
You get a very exciting arc.
I got the coolest thing I've ever gotten. Well, yeah. I don't know. I don't know about that. But I have a very cool job. It's top up 10. There. Top 10. So, you know, we have, we as booksellers have access to this database called Edelweiss. It's where we write reviews and we can add notes to things and we can mark things as highly anticipating and we can submit reviews to the Indie Next catalogs and things like that. And it's also where our buyers will like go through their catalogs and order books and stuff like that. So it's very much like bookseller central. And I will often leave very feral notes on things, just screeching into the void about, oh my God, I didn't know this book had a cover. Oh my God, this book is amazing. I'm so excited for this book, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, sometimes I get like an email back from like our pub rep or whatever, being like, I'm so excited that you're so excited. This is great. Whatever. So there was a book that I did this for, where I was going through the event grids helping to pitch for different events, and there was a book on there. There was an author and book, and I literally was like, oh my God, I didn't know that this third book in a trilogy already had a cover and a release date and all of this. And so I wrote a very feral note and also screenshotted it and sent it to Sam, who also went very feral over it. And that book was the third book in the trilogy by Stephen Graham Jones. This one's called The Angel of Indian Lake.
Yay!
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's bittersweet because it new is book,
the
last
final in the trilogy starring our dear, dear Jade Daniels, who we love. You know, it's the trilogy that starts with My Heart is a Chainsaw. The second one is Don't Fear the Reaper. And the third and final book is called The Angel of Indian Lake. So, you know, I went fully feral about this book on Edelweiss and then kind of didn't think anything of it from there. And then I came into work the other day and there was a package on my desk and I was like, yay, a book. And I opened it up and oh my gosh, it was a bound manuscript of The Angel of Indian Lake. And I shrieked a little bit and I took a picture and sent it to Sam.
That's right.
And I said, oh my God, Sam! thinking, yay, an arc that we can all share, hooray! Right. And I sat down and showed someone else the book. We were having a horror event that night, so there were, you know, I was like, everyone will appreciate this. And the person next to me was like, oh, when does that come out? And I was like, oh, hang on, I can't remember. And I opened the book and said, oh my gosh, there's a very sweet little note here that I did not read at the time because I was trying to find the pub date. And I was like, oh, that's nice. There's a nice little note from someone. And then I pulled the note out. And the bound manuscript is signed. It's signed by Stephen Graham Jones. And not only that, underneath his signature, it says number 8 of 10.
Oh my God.
Which means there's only 10 of these bound manuscripts in existence. And I have one of them. And the note was from the Saga Press marketer, Savannah, who heard through the grapevine about how excited I was for this book. And so she sent me this bound manuscript, and I lost my mind.
I mean, I saw Sam the day that you got that, and Sam was like, did Ryan text you about what she got? And I was like, what? No, why? What?
The text I sent to Sam was so unintelligible. So it started just with a picture of the book. And then it followed up with Sam, oh my god, Sam, it's signed, Sam, it is signed. Just like couldn't.
Yeah.
And then just more pictures, and then I am shaking, and then what even is this life? And then lots of crying faces, and it was just it, I mean, oh my god.
Oh my god.
So I have started it. And I'm about 25, maybe 30% of the way through. I think it's the fastest I've ever read one of his books.
I think
we all have listened to both of the other ones on audio, so yes. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah, I honestly think I'll be able to
do the print better. I am devouring it.
Yeah.
I'm devouring it. But I also can't wait for the audiobook because I do love the narrator and I love, like, Jade's voice. But, yeah, this one takes place 4 years after the events of the second one. And Jade is back in Proof Rock. And so is a serial killer. And Jade is pretty sure that it is the Angel of Indian Lake.
Fantastic.
And it is real dark and real good and real slashery, and I am just in
I
all of
feel
my
like
glory.
People, not people, like how hard it is to make a book that feels like a slasher.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes.
No one does.
It's so hard.
I don't think I've ever read a book that feels like a slasher except for this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to the point where, and I was talking to Sam about this, but so like, you know how in a slasher movie, like in a horror movie, there's the opening kill before anything else starts.
Yep.
So it's like you open
the
it up
Drew
this
Barrymore.
Like, there's the Drew Barrymore, right? Like there's no like title screen or credits or anything. It's like it opens up, a scene is happening, someone gets murdered, and then the title credits, right?
Yeah.
These books do that, and it's so effective. Because it opens up and you're like following these two characters and you're just kind of like, oh, like these two random people in Proof Rock, that's nice. And then like they get viciously, horrifically murdered. And then it's like, boom,
cut to normal.
Jay Daniels coming back to Proof Rock. And you're just like, oh my God, he did it.
He did it.
And I think that's in every single one of them.
Yeah.
And I definitely remember it in the second one for sure. And yeah, it just, the way the books are so meta in that Jade is obsessed with slashers.
Yeah.
And so she is like the Randy from Scream. Yeah. Like she's constantly like talking about the rules of slashers and things like that. Like it is very meta in that sense. But it's not to the level of Scream where like Jade doesn't know she's in a book.
Yeah.
But
I've never seen Scream.
I know. I didn't want to like call Sam out. She admitted this to me the other day and I thought I was going to lose my mind.
I'm just planning on watching it tonight,
guys. I'm sorry. Okay, no, you should.
It's good.
Please text me as you watch it. I want your
same. Okay. Please, my God. I was like,
she's gonna spoil something and I actually like don't
I promise
really
I won't.
Know. I know, but like I also don't know the details.
Yeah. I realized that as I was saying what I was saying, but then I was like, Sam probably knows that part of Scream at least.
Yeah.
Like
I knew the Drew Barrymore thing.
Yeah.
That's so funny. It's great.
My favorite slasher series.
I think it's my favorite. It's just because it
Right.
Knows
what
is
going
genre.
On. Yeah.
Here's the thing. Yeah. I watched scary movies so much as a kid.
Yeah.
I feel like I've seen it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I know 100%. I haven't, but like it feels like I have.
There are definitely horror movies that I felt like I had seen because of things like scary movie.
Yeah.
Or just pop culture in general.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I referenced them so much that I was like, oh, I feel like it was, I mean, years before I finally saw like Nightmare on Elm Street, but I was like, "Well, I know what happens."
Like the Freddy.
Friday the 13th. I didn't see any of those movies until like a few years ago.
Yeah,
it was just like a.
And see, like I think Scream is my favorite franchise, but I am at my core a Jason Voorhees girly.
Yes,
and that is because Friday the 13th was the first franchise that I watched in full. I binge watched it in college.
Yeah.
I bought the full set And this was around the same, it was like the same year that the requel came out.
Okay.
And yeah. So I watched all of them and then ended with that one. And I just, it changed my DNA a little bit. So I'm definitely a Jason girly, but I think I do, I mean, Scream is like every single one of them is perfect. I love all of them.
So one thing, looping back to Stephen Graham Jones, is Sam was saying, like, it's sad that it's the last one.
Is it the last one?
Because I just watched Friday the 13th, the final chapter. It's the fourth one. Yeah. Like, it came out, like, 40 years ago.
Yeah, right, I know, but, like...
It does... Okay.
It might be a bit, though.
Yeah.
It does feel a little bit... All of the marketing is, like, the end of our Jade Daniel, yeah. The final chapter with Jade Daniel. Like, they're very, like, which is, like, either, yes, it's the end and we're sad about it, or, what are you trying to tell us?
Yeah. Yeah. You trying to trick us?
Are you trying to trick us?
Steven? I mean, it's working.
You trying to trick us? I don't know. We'll find out when I finish it. We'll see if I feel like there's maybe more coming. Who knows? But it's really, really good.
The thing about slashers, which is so great, is, like, they're formulaic, but there's so much you can do with it when you do it well. Mm. And I feel like, I don't know, you just, like, put it in a different place, and I will just, like, you know, it's like, now it's in this, like, different environment, and I'm just here.
Jason takes Manhattan.
Yeah.
Jason in space. Yeah.
Why not? Let's
Jason
go.
Goes to hell, but he doesn't? I don't know. It's a I love this series so much. And it's what's interesting is I feel like this is a series that really, it grew on me. Like, I enjoyed the first one, and then the ending of the first one is what really got me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I cried at the ending of the first one because, I don't know, motherhood and metaphors, and I was just like, it's beautiful. And then the second one I liked even more, and then this one, I'm literally devouring it. Like, when I'm not reading it, I want to be reading it. And
I think the first podcast I did 2 Octobers ago, we did
our talked about
that was the one
we all read.
I think you're right. Yeah.
So we still love it.
Still love it. And, you know, to answer the question that was the whole reason that I opened this book, it comes out May 16th.
Yay! 2 days before my birthday, right between me and Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
And right before Sam. Right.
The babies.
It's a maybe with us.
Yeah.
You know what's really funny, though? And I can tell that this is a bound manuscript because not only is it not formatted, it says May 16th, 2023.
Yeah.
Sure. Which is not... That's this year. So take that with a grain
of
salt.
Surprise, it's out already. Just no one knows. It's right there. It's behind you.
Oh, God. So do take that date with a tiny grain of salt because it's definitely not 2023. But I think it is. Hold on. I can check that for you. March 26th.
Because I had thought it was coming out earlier in the spring, but then I was like, maybe they just moved
March, May. Yeah.
So, surprise. It actually comes out March 26, 2024, and it is available for pre-order now from Gibson's Bookstore. Please pre-order it. Especially, please pre-order it because, like I said, I did pitch for an event with Stephen Graham Jones.
Yes.
And I don't know, if we get a lot of pre-orders, maybe that will show the publisher that they should send him to us. So
yeah, and that's, we
Ryan has
like
ways
that.
Of making things happen.
I do tend to manifest events with my buddies.
So help her.
Ryan manifests and Sam and I just stand in the background and are like, hi, how are you? Good luck, right?
Great,
Good job.
A+. Will you sign it, please? Thank you.
We will come back to some of that manifesting a little bit later.
Ooh, what good.
I know, wasn't that good? Just really quickly, some other things that I have read or am reading. For the Jack of All Graves book club, I read What Moves the Dead by T. Kingfisher.
Mm-hmm. Good timing.
Real good timing. It is an adaptation of Follow the House of Usher by Edgar Allan Poe. Mm-hmm. That show is out now on Netflix, and it's fantastic. I haven't finished it, so no spoilers. I mean,
okay,
it's Fall of the Hush Monster, so I kind of know. But like, you know, I've only seen a couple episodes, but I'm loving it.
Surprise, no one dies.
Not a single person dies. It's wild. But it's really funny because I was reading What Moves the Dead, and every time they would talk about the House of Usher, I would just giggle because I just thought she named it the House of Usher, like, as a cute little nod to Poe. Like, I wasn't putting two and two together that it was actually genuinely an adaptation until the end when I went, oh, wait a minute.
Oh, hold on.
Because it had been a minute since I'd read the original, so. But that was great.
Sporer, also.
Sporer, yeah. Weird mushrooms. Weird deaths. A funky lake. It's great.
It's a good time.
I also read, I don't think I talked about this one on the last episode, I read Nestlings by Nat Cassidy, which, if you're listening to this, is out today. And that book is, like, people are comparing it to Rosemary's Baby meets Salem's Lot.
Oh, okay.
Which I think is, like, pretty apt. It's absolutely another one of those horror novels that taps into the horrors of parenthood. It also talks about disability. The main character is in a wheelchair but is living in an apartment building and, like, the struggles of that. And also vampires and, yay, like, gargoyles. And
it has a great cover.
Because
it was one cover. It was on Libro FM, and yes. I was like, oh, okay.
This really, like, stone-looking bird in a net. Yeah, it's real. It takes place in New York City.
There's not enough gargoyle stories, you know?
Right? Yeah. It's great. It's really, really good. It's one of those ones that I listened to it, and I was like, oh, this is going to stick with me for a hot minute. Like, this one's sank into my bones in a cool way. And then currently I am listening to Fever House by Keith Rawson, which is very cool. I described it earlier as The Wire meets Supernatural. So
interesting vibe.
It very specific vibes in that. So there's like this almost noir style police procedural. However, you're also following, like, the criminals of the police procedural. Like, you're, like, kind of on both sides. And there's also, like, not quite corrupt cops, but they're like an X-Files type. So they're breaking the rules because they know this thing is supernatural. And they have, like, their own little team that doesn't have to play by the normal rules. And the thing that they are hunting down is a hand of the devil. And
good choices.
Calls to you, and it makes you do things like murder other people. It makes you hurt people. It makes some people hurt themselves in horrific ways. So that's kind of like the basis, is that this hand... It caused a lot of mayhem and is now somewhere, and it's in the wrong hands, and they're trying to find it before it does too much more damage, but every time they get close to it, bad things happen. It's very fun. It's very, like, sort of adventure-y. I'm liking that one a lot. And then two others that people at the NEBA conference were like, Ryan, you need to read these. Hum by Helen Phillips. So years ago, I got an ARC of a book called The Need by Helen Phillips ahead of, like, a special dinner thing that I was going to go to where a bunch of authors were going to be, and Helen Phillips was one of them, and I read The Need and fell in love with it. It was this, like, really dark thriller about, like, motherhood and paranoia and home invasion, but it takes, like, a really interesting supernatural twist, and I loved it. And so now she has a new one out, coming out, called Hum, which I just started, so I don't really know exactly what it's about, except that I know that there is an AI aspect to it. And so it's kind of like a dark AI.
Like the hum of, like, computers?
Oh, yes. Okay,
and, like, hum meaning, like, it's, like, human but not.
Oh.
And so they're, like, robots and... Yeah, it's... So far, it's really... It opens with, like a dentist visit, and it's, like, she's getting, like, dental work done by this, like, AI robot, and she's, like, real nervous, but also, like... I don't know. She's, like, part of this program, so she has to trust it because she's one of the people who, like, promotes it. Yeah. It's... I'm not very far into it, but really, really good so far. And then the other one is called The Garden by Claire Beams. And this was one where we were sitting down. There was a panel of like publicists who were recommending books from their publishers, and this woman she described this book, and when I tell you, every single person in the room turned and looked at me.
Yeah, like it was genuinely, at the very least, our entire table was like, Ryan.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. And, like, the two tables in front of me also both turned around and looked at me. And so, yeah, I just started that, but it takes place. There's a woman who is 14 weeks pregnant, and I forget what decade it takes place in, but it's definitely in the past. And she goes to this home where there is this married doctor team, this husband and wife doctor team. And they take in women around 14 weeks pregnant who have had several miscarriages. And so they bring them in and they're like, we're going to get you to term, essentially.
Don't trust it.
Yeah, Sam's face.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Well, you said husband and wife, doctor team. I was like, no.
Right
no.
off the bat.
No.
Shady like, vibes.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Shady vibes.
Yeah.
And how are you guaranteeing this? I don't care for this.
That's the other shady well, that's vibes. Thing. And it's like she gets there and has like her initial kind of whatever doctor's visit, and then they like show her to her room, and like, you know, she goes to like open the curtains in her room, and they're like, what are you doing? You can't open the curtains. You should rest.
Uh-oh.
And then she, like, they're like, dinner's at this time. And she's like, okay. She, like, takes a little nap. She wakes up. She's like, I'm going to go for a walk. I, like, could use some sunshine or whatever. She, like, goes for a little walk. She finds a garden. It's called The Garden. Mm-hmm. She finds a garden, which is, like, she just finds it interesting. There's, like, a well in there. And she just is like, this garden's intriguing. Goes back in the house. They're like, where have you been? You should be resting. Okay. She goes in to have dinner. Everyone's eating dinner except the doctors. It's like, they're not allowed to have salt. They're not allowed to have sugar. And the doctor's like, it's for the baby's health.
Sure.
Okay. It's real weird vibes. Real weird vibes. And she just keeps, she hasn't bought all the way in yet. Yeah. And I feel like she's going to uncover something real dark, and I'm excited to find out what.
I feel like if someone says, like, you need some rest, there's, like, a 72% chance they're trying to kill you.
Yeah.
Like,
right?
Or, no one says that without some intent.
Yeah.
Except maybe your mom.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think one of our bosses texted me earlier.
You should rest. You need to rest.
Well, so, watch your back, Joe. They might be trying to get you.
So, yeah. real dark vibes on that one. I don't quite know where it's going yet, but I'm excited because it is a horror novel. So,
yeah, you know something's wrong.
So I know something's happening. So I'm excited. What about you guys? What have you been reading and such?
Yeah, so I've been reading a lot of horror, and so I don't want to talk about all of it right off the bat because we'll talk more horror later. But I did read the new graphic novel by Stephen Graham Jones called Earth Divers, Kill Columbus. I was like, okay, that's it. That's all I need. Thank you. And it is about a group in a post-apocalyptic America who realize that they need to go back in time and kill Columbus in order to save the world because colonialism has ruined everything. And it is so bloody, and it's very good.
Okay.
I mean, that's a great cover.
It is a great cover, and it is the first in a series. Because it says there's a note from Stephen Graham Jones at the beginning that's like, originally it was just going to be like Columbus, but then the publisher, I think it's Image, was like, play with this more, like, go into other periods. So I'm so curious to see, like, what's coming and what other things might happen. But
I'm excited.
Time travel, murdering Columbus.
I'm so glad that you read that, because I have an arc of that.
Oh my god.
They sent me an arc, and it ended up on my horror shelf without me opening it, which is, you know, that's pretty typical. so I'm really glad that you mentioned that.
And that's, I find graphic novels, I can be like, okay, I can read this in one night.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They're one of the only things that I will read as soon as I buy them. Like,
fair.
Everything else, it's a,
that's fair.
Yeah. And then there were a few others I have read. I finally read If We Were Villains by M.L. Rio, which is a book talk favorite. Dark academia, bunch of students at an acting conservatory who are obsessed with Shakespeare, like, like,
in a weird way?
In, like, a bad way. Like, okay. Like, yeah. And it's very secret history. Like, it is, if that is your vibe, you should read it. And I will also shout out These Violent Delights by Micah Never-Emmer, which I read back in the fall of 2020, and, like, no one was talking about it, and then it kind of got picked up a little on Book Talk, but, like, if you need dark academia, like, gays obsessed with each other and committing murder, like, it's Leopold and Loeb vibes, but in the 70s at a college. So it's very good. And so I'm just gonna shut that out while we're talking dark academia. I also read The Death I Gave Him by M.X. Liu, which is a retelling of Hamlet. It is a sci-fi retelling. It's interesting. So Elsinore is a lab. They're all after Hamlet Sr. dies, the lab shuts down, and they're all trapped in it together overnight, trying to figure out what's happening. There is a romantic relationship between Horatio and Hamlet. Horatio is an AI.
Oh my god.
That's very funny.
It's very good. It's very weird. It has a lime green cover. I very much enjoyed that one. It was weird.
Hamlet's dad have a name?
Like, his Hamlet.
It's Hamlet Senior.
Yeah, like, he's King Hamlet, that. The king. Like, yeah.
All right.
That's very funny that's to me. Hamlet's that it's just like Hamlet's like a junior. Yeah. And I feel like that like says a lot about who he is.
And like, is that
that tracks.
His last name? Right. Maybe? I don't know.
You're the Shakespeare person. You should know.
I know I should know. But
do better, Drew.
Yeah, you know, I think it's vague. Yeah. And it's based on, we don't have to.
Sorry, I was just genuinely
this
curious.
This story didn't actually originate with Shakespeare, shockingly. He just, like, copied another play, but did it better. Yeah, like, genuinely, there was a play, like, not that long before Shakespeare. And he was just like, I can do that better, thanks, bud. Which, you know, he did, so. Yeah. I'd feel bad for the guy if the other guy had written a good play, but apparently he didn't. Anyway, that was great. And then the last one I wanted to mention was The Deaths of Sybil Bolton by Dennis McAuliffe. So this is one that I remember, or Hillary, who used to be on the podcast, it came in and she ran and like threw it at me. She didn't throw it at me, but she was like, Joe, oh my god. Because we had previously in book club discussed Killers of the Flower Moon. And I was like, this book is great. I would love more of an indigenous perspective on it. And this is a book, it came out originally in 1994, but it has gotten a re-release since Killers of the Flower Moon has become so successful. About a man who he grew up believing that his grandmother died of kidney disease. She was Osage. He learns that at first he's told, actually, she committed suicide.
Those two things don't usually go together.
And then he found out that she had shot herself in the heart with a shotgun.
Nope.
Not how that usually works. And so it's his process of trying to figure out what happened to his grandmother. Mm-hmm. And so if you haven't read Killers of the Flower Moon or now seen the film, it is about the Osage murders, the Reign of Terror in the early 1920s, which was the Osage in Oklahoma had land rights to the land and everything beneath it, including the oil. So then when there was oil found on the land, they got really rich. And white people did what white people do and figured out ways to get their money mostly by murdering them. So, yeah, it's a fascinating story about how, this very specific situation that happened in Oklahoma, but then this one is very personal. And I think Dennis McAuliffe does a really good job of, like, highlighting some of the things, because Killers of the Flower Moon is called, like, the Osage Murders and Birth of the FBI or something. And the FBI did not do a good job with this one.
No.
Like, and I think it's very interesting to read them kind of as companion pieces. Mm-hmm. And the new edition, the introduction, is written by David Grant.
So
that's cool. He was like, this was big for me in terms of reading it. It's like basically the only other book out there about this.
Wow. Crazy.
So anyway, read Killers of the Flower Moon. Like, it's
it's a story that everyone should know.
You should learn about it, and you should definitely look into the indigenous perspectives of it.
Yeah.
Sam, what about you?
All right. I read a manga. I still don't know how to pronounce that word. Called Uzumaki. And it's about a town that becomes obsessed with spirals. And it's weird, guys. It gets bananas. And they're making a TV show out of it.
Okay.
And it's been in, like, production hell for, like, a long time. So, like, it has a very big, following. And it's very unsettling. Because it's just, like, all of a sudden there's, like, spirals, like, in the waters or whirlpools. And, like, people who are, like, being cremated, they're, like, their ashes spiral up.
Ooh.
And, like, it's crazy. And that's only what I've really finished this month. I'm reading, like Ryan said, like, a lot. I haven't quite finished anything, but one that I'm very excited about is Joe Gut for Me from Neba.
Yes.
Called Rainbow Black by Maggie Thrash.
Yes.
And it's Satanic Panic. This is my favorite.
It's so good.
I love it. And it's set in New Hampshire.
I was going to say she's local.
She's local.
A lot of it's set in Concord.
That's so cool.
You just, I talked to her at Neba and I was like, I was so excited when I saw there was a book set in New Hampshire and it wasn't at one of the boarding schools. Like,
truly,
that's the only thing people are like, they went to a vague boarding school in Western New Hampshire. And then you're like, okay, well, that's very different from, like, growing up in New Hampshire.
Truly.
Yeah.
I just love the Satanic Panic. This is my favorite thing. And it's about a young girl. She's 13 at the time. Her parents run a daycare. And they get accused of, like, I can't remember what the daycare was that kind of started the Satanic Panic.
McMartin.
Where it was just, like, outlandish things.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They made them drink blood under the moonlight.
Like, killed a gorilla they stole from the zoo. Like, something, things that could not possibly have happened.
Like, they got Punky Brewster to come. Like, like, just things that are obviously lies. And, like, so in this young girl is in this small town, and her parents are accused of being, like, child molesters, like, satanic child molesters.
Yeah.
And just, like, and she's, very clearly queer, mm-hmm. and that's, like, weaponized against her in the trial, and just, like, how her parents, like, handle it, just, like...
And that was a big thing, too, when McMartin was one of the daycare workers was a lesbian, and that was yeah. really right. weaponized. Anyway.
Right. So it's just, it is... It's there's two timelines. One is it's happening in the 90s when the satanic panic happens and the girl and her parents, and then she runs away. And then the next part is set in the future or okay. present for us. And she's got a new identity and like no one knows about her, like, I don't know, sordid past. And then I haven't even gotten to this, but something happens that kind of brings it all back up. It's very good, and it's, like, pretty well done in the fact of, like, it feels like New Hampshire.
That's awesome.
You know, it's very cool. So I really liked that.
I'm excited to read that.
Yeah.
And it has a great cover. It's black with a neon pink goat's head.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
I love pink horror.
Yeah, it was a thing. As soon as I saw the arc, I was like, ooh.
Yeah. Another book I'm in the middle of listening to is The September House.
Yay! I love that one.
Yeah, it's very good. And again, like, I don't want to say feel good horror, but like,
I totally know what you mean.
You know what I mean? It's just like very much, it's for horror fans, you know, like, because it's a lot of like, I don't know, like a self-aware haunted house story.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, a really about, like, this woman's abusive marriage.
Right.
But it's just, like, the type of person, like, which I always felt like I'd be like.
Yeah.
Like, I would just, like, buy a haunted house and the walls start to bleed and I'm like, if I just don't look at it...
You absolutely... It doesn't. Yeah, that yeah. is you.
That
yeah.
is it. If I don't look at it, it's not real. And it's just, like... this woman just kind of I wouldn't say befriends, but just like there's a bunch of like crazy stuff happening. There's ghosts and there's murder, like, you know, like,
yeah.
And she's just like, yep, this is my life.
Yeah.
And
she's like, oh, well, Elias bites.
Yeah.
So just don't get too close to Elias. Just don't.
And so this woman's husband goes missing. And again, she just kind of is like, well, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And then their daughter comes home, and she's been trying to, like, keep the daughter out of the haunted house because...
Yeah, the daughter doesn't know.
The daughter doesn't know.
That it's haunted.
And it's good. It's, like, again, it's weird to say, like, fun.
It's, well, I compared it to, like, a Grady Hendrix novel.
Yeah.
Like, it's, like, there's moments of humor. Like,
yeah.
There's moments of, like... There's very, like, sweet moments.
Yeah.
And there's very... And then there's, like, the actual horror. So mm-hmm. it's, like... Yeah. I don't know. It,
yeah.
like, it strikes a very cool chord.
There's a fun, like, kind of, like, a priest kind of doing a grift. Or, you know what I mean? Like...
yes. Yes. Oh, God,
so, like, just, like, who comes in and, like, blesses the house.
Yeah.
But then it's just...
He has to come back every month.
Yeah.
It never works.
Yeah.
It never sticks.
So that was fun. It's just, it's like, it's very much like the things you think about, like, when you're watching or reading a horror book or movie, and you're like, well, what if they did this? You know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
No one takes the usual turns. Like,
yes.
The choices are all,
yes.
for better or worse.
Right.
Yeah.
So that one's very good, as Ryan can attest to.
Yeah.
So,
I love that one.
And then I went a little old school.
Ooh.
And read part of Firestarter.
Ooh,
by Stephen King, because I'm trying to work my way through, like, all of them. It's going slow. I know I told you, like, a month ago I was going to do it. I've not read a one. I've not finished a one. But, yeah, like, I don't know. It just reminds, it's got, like, that fun 80s unhinged Stephen King vibe.
I love that.
It's just, like, one of those things where it's, like, with all, like, old Stephen King, you have to be, like, it was of a time,
yeah.
like, you know.
Yeah.
But it's got, like, if you're, like, into, like, secret shadow governments and, like, okay. doing, like, experiments on people, like, especially in the 60s when they're doing, or, like, 50s and 60s when they're doing, like, MKUltra and,
yeah.
like, the acid and stuff like that. So it's basically, like, what if they did that? And these two college students meet at one of these. It's a, you know, like a like the psychology department's doing a test, like, can you just get your friends to sign up and we'll give you $100.
Right.
So they do it, and then they fall in love at the test, but they also got superpowers. Not superpowers, but, like, one can do telekinesis, and one can read minds and kind of, like, distort reality.
Whoa.
And then they have a baby.
Oh, boy.
And the baby's super powerful.
Oh, boy.
And Firestarter. Like, pyrokinetics, I think it's called. And, yeah, it's just, like...
That's fun.
They're running away from the government.
Love that.
It's a lot of, like, Stephen King, like, you know, there's a big, like, the villains, very villainy.
Yes.
And I don't know, it's you know, it's definitely, and, like, it's got the, not great, it's got the movie with Drew Barrymore, Drew Barrymore.
Yeah, iconic.
Like, maybe not great, iconic is better.
There you go.
So, yeah, that was great. And then another one, which I know Ryan has also been reading, is the Jordan Peele.
Yes.
Yes. And Joe also did.
Yes.
Out there screaming. Oh, my God.
Oh, it was really good.
That's a really good, like, bite-sized.
Yes. Yes.
Bite-sized.
Yeah. I love it so much.
Yeah.
It was one of the better anthologies I've ever read, like, in terms of consistency.
Yeah,
they're all good.
Yeah, you kind of often with anthologies, like, it starts off really well and then there's a lull in the middle and you're like, okay, and then maybe they'll pick up, but this one was just, like, really good. The last story in that,
I'm finished it yet.
Yeah, I'm not gonna spoil it, but so it's so good. It's so weird.
So good. And, like, the whole time I was reading it, it was, like, whatever story I was on, I was like, this is the best one.
Yeah.
And then I would read the next one, and I'd be like, nope, this is the best one. Like, it just, I loved all of them so much, because they're all very different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, like, the first one's N.K. Jemisin, and it has, like, creepy cars.
Yeah.
Which is...
With, like, eyeballs.
Yeah.
Always fun.
It's great.
And, like, you know, some, like, social commentary.
Yeah.
Very much, yeah.
But it's not all that. Like, it's
some
just straight plain horror. Yeah. And we've been calling it the Jordan Peele book, but it was curated by, or edited.
Edited by him, he does not write anything.
Yes,
yet,
correct. But, that should be.
But it is a bunch of,
it's very
great black horror authors.
Yes.
It's so good. I so, so desperately want him to adapt these into, like, little anthology.
Like mini-series.
Movies, like, little mini-movies.
That'd be really
that'd
cool.
That'd be amazing. Come on, Jordan. Do it, do
I'm
it.
Sure he has nothing else going on.
Yeah.
No, I loved that one. And I'll mention Never Whistle at Night. We mentioned this... last episode, but none of us had read it. I have read it now, edited by Shane Hawk and Theodore Van Alst, and it is dark indigenous fiction.
Ugh.
Or indigenous dark fiction.
Incredible.
And it is very good, and it has a great cover, and it has an introduction by Stephen Graham Jones, because he's everywhere. We love him. So, I think they're two very good, like, kind of pairs, and often, like, if someone's buying one, I'll be like, have you heard about this other one? Because horror anthologies.
I love them. They're so good
right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. I think horror sometimes is better format as short stories.
It certainly can be.
Because sometimes horror has a hard time ending.
Like, maintaining.
Yeah. Maintaining and coming. Yeah. And you can also, with a short story, kind of give it a, like, ambiguous or, like, oh no, like, the eyes opened and you're like, oh, that's it. Like, you can, you don't necessarily have to end it in the same way as, like, I've read a 300-page novel, you better, like, actually deliver on this, whereas it can be kind of more of a spooky, like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Moment.
Yeah. Kind of that being said, I mean, there is obviously so much good horror that does have
good endings.
But yes, there, I think sometimes I love a horror novella or short story because they're so tight.
Yeah.
And because, like, it's almost like you're just
opening a window and, like, seeing a little piece of horror and then shutting the window again. It's, like, this little, like,
right.
As opposed to a fully fleshed out world with fully fleshed out characters. I don't know.
And, like, we've talked about, like, a lot of very... The best horror is, like, you don't see much. Like, Jaws.
Yeah.
Like, that sort of thing. I feel like just by the nature of what it is easier to do in short stories. Like, I would say Stephen King is a better short story writer than he is a novelist.
Yeah.
Which, you know, horror.
It's absolutely.
But.
Yeah. Okay. So, since it is our Halloween episode, we are going to continue focusing on horror. And I think we will mention some of our other horror novels that we've read and loved this year. But then we are also going to, we're going to do our little yearly Halloween book club that has become tradition here, where the three of us read the same book and then gush about it. And this year, the book that we all read was Black River Orchard by Chuck Wendig.
Yay, scary apples!
Evil apples!
Love an evil apple.
And, you know, I mentioned earlier that I manifest things. And boy, oh boy, did I manifest an event with Chuck Wendig in conversation with Clay McLeod Chapman. Holy moly!
Yep.
That happened.
Yep.
That sure happened. That was a thing that we did here last month.
It did. It was very good. And we still have tons of signed copies.
Yes!
Of both of their books. Oh my gosh. So please, please, order them or come to the store and grab some.
Yes. We have lots and lots of signed Chuck Wendig. We have lots and lots of signed Clay McLeod Chapman. Their books are so good. They're so good. You need them. You need them. Mm-hmm. Just trust me. yeah. So that event was an utter delight. We got to have dinner with them ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And
talk about cults.
We did. We talked about cults. We talked about all kinds of good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they had a really good time. And we had a really good crowd for it. And their discussion was amazing. And there were cookies and apples and fortune tellings. It was great. It was a whole time.
Like, two books that on the surface don't seem very compatible. They were.
They
like
the crab worked. Apple
thing really worked.
Yeah. Yeah. The crab apple event. That it, you know, it happened. It worked. And I did it.
Yeah. Yay. You work your magic on Stephen Graham Jones.
I'm trying. he's next. So I guess real quick we can talk a little bit about Black River Orchard, and then we can kind of finish up with just sort of rounding out the year of horror with some of our faves. Hilariously, they sent me a book club kit for Black River Orchard, and I was looking at some of the questions earlier, and it's really funny because I don't know about you guys, but as soon as I finish a book, I forget everybody's names.
Oh, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I literally looked up a list of characters because thank I knew you that because was my, gonna be a question.
Literally, the first question was which character in Black River Orchard did you most identify with and why? And I was like, well, Calla, because she's the only name I can remember. which is not, you know, I love all of the characters. I just couldn't remember anybody's names. I don't remember anybody's names.
I also didn't know how to pronounce it, so I was calling it Calla. Cal, you know
what
I mean?
Oh, because like, you...
Yeah,
and yeah, then, like, I listened like, to it, so yeah.
Yeah,
so I was just sense. Like... Yeah, because I read it, and I hate reading...
on an e-reader, yeah.
But I read it.
A digital arc.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because I wanted to read it that bad.
Yes. Yes.
You know what? Fair. Would do again.
Absolutely. It was great. It was really great.
I do love the ambition of sending out a book club kit for a, like, 700-page book.
Oh, my God,
I'm like, we will do this.
Yes.
Yeah.
If I pitch it to the book club, they will not be thrilled.
No. Oh, God, I can't.
We have a, like, 300-page limit.
Yeah. But, yeah, maximum.
But yeah, I really liked it. And I have, I think, out of the three of us read the least Chuck Wendig. I think I know I've only read Book of Accidents.
Okay.
Because that was another one that, like, we got a free audiobook of, and you two were talking about. So it was
I read it, and yeah, and I wasn't sure how I was going to feel. I was like, this is a long book about apples? Okay, I'll see. And it was really good.
But it's so good.
You know what is weird? Like, the apple history of it was also kind of interesting.
Yes. Oh,
like,
totally.
I don't know. Like, the fact that there's people that, like, hunt apples, yeah, like, different apple species.
I know.
Like,
that was, I asked Chuck about that at dinner, and he gave me a little bit of information, but I'm like, no, I want to listen. I want to know everything about this. This is fascinating. Yeah. People do this. This is now, I think this is my new passion, because this is a weird thing to do with an archives, and I love it. But yeah, and just, like, the kind of history and, not even history, but, like, the fact that you have to graft apples, like, I kind of vaguely knew that, but, like, for listeners who don't know, if you just, like, plant an apple seed, it's gonna come up with a nasty apple. Like, it's not gonna be, they call them spitters, and they just, it's not going to taste like the apple that you took the seed from. So what you have to do is, like, you have a one that you've grown, an apple tree, and then if you have one apple that you really like, you have to cut a piece off of that tree and, like, cut open the other one and wrap,
like,
it,
lash to, it like, together
until it grows, it becomes part of the tree, and then you, like, cut off all the limbs with the gross apples until it just produces the apples that you
the
like.
Good apples.
Wild.
It's insane.
And I think about, like, there is an apple orchard not too far from the bookstore, and, like, you can just stand and, like, all you can see are apple trees. I'm like, you guys grafted all of these?
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like,
what?
It's so much work. And it also, like, that's so horrific that you're like, I'm going to take this, like, let's put it in, like, human terms. I'm going to take the arm of this person and I'm going to tie it to you. And as soon as your muscles start to fuse together and your nerves start to fuse together, I'm going to cut off all your old limbs.
Yeah.
So that you're just this one
thing.
It
is a very Frankenstein.
It's so violent. I love it.
To do. Yeah. Yeah. So I think a lot of that was really interesting to me. And I think he did a good job of, like, weaving it in without it ever being, like, an info dump of being like, oh my God, I'm just reading about apples and, like, talking about Johnny Appleseed, who, fascinating.
Yeah. Right, like it didn't have to be, like, that part didn't have to be part of it, but it was actually very interesting.
Yeah. It was cool. Yeah. I loved it. I love that there's a question in this kit that's, like, basically, how do you think the story changes if you take away the apple part and replace it with something else?
Mm.
Like, the most delicious Twinkie you've ever had in your life. That's the example they give, which I think is delightful.
okay, I have an inappropriate joke that I'm going to make on air. We'll save that
for later. But yeah, I find that really interesting because, like, does it work if it's not apples?
Well, it's interesting because apples are, like, a very, like, symbolic
fruit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're, it's the Garden of Eden, it's, you know, original sin, it's wholesome, like, it's what you give a teacher, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is a very, of all the fruits, the most symbolic.
Yeah. And I think the most, maybe not the most American fruit, but, like, a very,
as American as apple pie.
As apple pie, and I do think Chuck weaves in the colonial aspect of apples, which is fascinating, because that's some part of the Johnny Appleseed thing, is, like, when you planted trees on a piece of land, you were, like, claiming it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a way of taking, like, indigenous sovereignty from them over that piece of land. And, like, oh, okay, of course, apples. Of course it was colonialist. Like, it couldn't, we can't do anything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure it could work. I'm sure somebody could go into.
Yeah. But I don't know that it works in the same way. I don't know that it works as well if it's not apples.
And I think it would have to be somebody who, written by someone who knows as much about Twinkies as Chuck Wendig knows about apples.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there is, you know, history to lots of different things, but I think apples, like, are very
Snow White. Snow White's apple, like,
It just has such a rich...
It's got a lot of, like, cultural, like, touchstones.
Yeah.
That I feel like a Poison Apple, like...
Yeah. And they're super common, too. I mean, not that's to be true. Obvious, but, yeah. like, everybody has eaten many, many yeah. apples in their day. Like, right. even people who don't like apples have eaten
yeah.
Yeah.
a number of apples because, yeah. you know, school lunches and, yeah. like, whatever. It is one of those very easy fruits, not, like, an orange that has all of the...
Well, like, that part everything. Of learning, like, stuff about apples, like, they have a long shelf life. Like, yeah. I was shocked when they were like, yeah, like, years. That yeah. all, like,
yep.
not sent storage, but you know what I mean, like, and I was just like, whoa, that is wild.
Yeah.
So, I like this question, because this was something that I was thinking about the whole time I was reading it. Do you think that the apple... caused evil thoughts and actions in those who ate it? Or was it, did it basically feed off of these little seeds of things that were already
inside
there?
Yeah.
Did it just accentuate what was already there?
I think the latter, because yeah. like, especially with the main guy, like, he presented himself as a very, like, mild-mannered, like, good guy, but he had ambition. Like,
yeah.
And that really, like, fed on his ambition.
Yeah.
And yeah. same with again none of the character names yeah. popping up to me, but the couple that yes. moved to
yeah.
The wife of one of the main characters.
Yep.
It feel like it fed on her jealousy.
Yeah. Meg. Yeah. Emily yes. and Meg.
Emily and Meg. Yeah.
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 I think this also is a good small town horror. I think mm-hmm. that is part of it, is these, like, seemingly mild-mannered people that you're surrounded with your entire life mm-hmm. have these other thoughts or
and, like,
secrets, and when they are enabled to... Mm-hmm.
And also, like, long-standing feuds. Like,
and long-standing yeah. feuds,
like,
yeah.
this, like, the fight over, like, this man has lost his apple orchard that his father owned, and it, like, drove his father to the, you know, to his death, and
yeah.
it's his revenge, or he believes it's his revenge by getting back, which just feels very small town, like, the petty fights over
yeah.
stuff, where you're like, my grandpa hates this person's grandpa, like, who knows right. why.
Yeah, who yeah. knows why, yeah. but we all hate each yeah, other.
Now we hate each other, and we're not allowed to talk to each
yeah.
other. And...
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is very small town.
Yeah. yeah. Absolutely. Do you think that ties into why some people were able to resist the apple? Because Calla spits it out.
Yeah.
And she's not the only one. There's a couple of people who spit out the apple.
It's interesting because I feel like Calla was a flawed character. Like, she also had ambition. Like, she wanted yeah. to be an
influencer.
Yeah. And her was, it was more contrarian.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
at first, because she just, like, was being a snotty teenager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she just, I feel like, had enough distance from it. She saw how it was changing people. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, I don't know if that was really ever explained why.
But she did try it once. Yeah. And spit it out because there was something weird in
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Emily too.
Yeah.
Emily tasted like worms or something.
Yeah. They
something
felt
like, moving.
Yeah. Something. So they did, I think it is kind of the people who are willing to overlook the dark side. Like, I'm trying to think of, but like, people overlooking something negative about something that they want to love, or that tastes good, that feels good, that gives them power or whatever. A lot of people can excuse a lot of things
hmm.
Mm-hmm. and can justify a lot of things and be like, yeah, okay, maybe I did feel that, but like, it's a really good apple though.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. it's a really good apple and it makes me feel really good, so I'm just gonna keep eating it because it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, and yeah, that they're are people who can't overlook some of that stuff, and I don't know if that's mm-hmm. like an innate thing necessarily as much as just like I don't know.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there were Because this question specifically says, what traits did the characters who didn't eat the apple share versus those who did? So now I'm trying to think back.
Well, Emily was allergic, wasn't she?
Emily was allergic.
Yes.
So...
Which I did love so that it's, honestly, her it's wife like people... not believing that she was allergic, which, like, is such a like manipulative, a like, yeah. We've all met that person who's like, are you though?
My mom is actually allergic to apples.
Corey from Jack of All Grapes is allergic to apples. Fascinating.
I would just die.
The skin.
I
just the skin. Oh, interesting.
Mac apples are the only joy in my life. Ever. Love them.
So, honestly, I mean, like, one of the traits is that they just don't like apples that
much. Well, I think it's, like, the contrarian thing.
It really
thing
is that,
it, like,
contrarian, like, no, I don't want your stupid apple.
Yeah, it's just, it's kind of like having a healthy distrust of, like, something everyone loves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then suddenly being like, hold on, just, and it's also, I think, they held off, and then we're like, wait, hold on, what's happening now?
Yeah, like, well, also because, like, if you think about, because Cal was, like, made that one post to social media, and initially had people being like, you know, the people who were under the thrall of the apple were commenting. But also there were people in the comments being like, okay, you see this too.
Yeah.
Which, again, feels right that they would be like teenagers who were just like, I don't want to eat an apple.
Yeah.
Like, like my dad's apple. You know?
Yeah.
Why would my parents are eating apples. So like, so yeah, it's almost like the like... just people who
not
just
going
don't
with the crowd.
Yeah. Who aren't
but like thing is like if someone offered me an apple, I'd eat it.
Oh yeah. I mean I absolutely again I love an apple. I love an apple. I would absolutely.
Can we talk about the apple name? Because which I thought was Ruby Slipper was a really good apple
name.
It's
a good apple.
And I was shocked that had not been
done.
It just feels like that's like a
it's a great name.
Yeah.
Well done, Chuck.
Well done, Chuck.
Especially go with, like, the fairy tale thing of, like, a poison apple.
Yeah. It just, it fits right. And then also, and the other name for it, the Harrow's Black Apple, is also very good.
Yeah.
For spooky apple.
Yeah.
The Harrow's Black. Yeah. Oh, that's so good.
That also feels like fairy tale.
Yeah. It's, like, two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
It's, like, one of them is, like, the shiny, pretty apple, and then the other one is, like, what's beneath. It's the dark, full of worms.
And like the ruby slippers are shiny and lovely, but she did take them off a dead woman. Like there is something dark to their ruby slippers
that's a very good
Wizard
point.
Of Oz as well that like
sparkly and pretty but they're stolen from a dead
we're
woman.
All mm-hmm. very you know as children wanted those slippers but like
are you willing to kill for them?
Yeah.
Right.
Dun, dun, dun!
I just, like, I feel like it's so hard to, like, come up with, like, good fake, like, band names.
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
my
you
God,
know what I mean? Like, I feel like a lot of time in media, it's really glaring, where it's like, this is awful, there's no way, like, this is an actual band. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was, it just felt very real, and, I just, I don't know, I thought that was fantastic.
I thought it was, you did a great job. Okay. I thought, I felt that all of the choices that the characters made felt legit. I know that sometimes I'll be reading something and a character will do something and I'll be like, you're just doing that to move
for
along
the plot.
Yeah, like, somebody has to make this terrible decision.
Yeah.
But
might as well be you.
Yeah.
Might as well be you. But I did feel, these felt like real people.
Yeah. And I think that's something he does well with his very, very long books is that, like, he does use that time well in terms of fleshing the characters out. Like, it doesn't feel like there's a ton of extraneous stuff, like, where, you know, sometimes longer books of any genre can get bogged down by being like, oh my goodness, maybe he didn't need to do all this. But he really does a good job of using that time to explore.
And his teenage characters weren't glaringly... You know,
they weren't obnoxious.
It was like, Gen Z.
Or just like it was... where are you? And it's an R and a U. Like, no one has a text like that since 2007.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not saying that another horror writer has an awful time writing
teenagers.
Teenagers, but
But, I mean, I think a lot of people have a hard time reading writing teenagers, because, like,
It wasn't perfect, but I thought, like,
like,
at least, like, the friend group
was, and a lot of very different kinds of characters with very different lives and stuff that he
and really, like, to. Most of them, I feel like, have an arc.
Yeah.
Which I find really, again, when you have this really huge book with this massive cast of characters, mm-hmm. it's really impressive to have more than one character arc happening. But, like, Kella has a whole character arc, her boyfriend has a whole character arc, her dad has a whole character arc, the lesbian couple has a whole character arc, the apple hunters have a whole character arc. Like, it's like, everybody has, like, they're in very different places at the end than they were at the beginning.
Like, a lifelong friendship of, like, the two apple hunters discussed, and, like, his, like, the partner's daughter.
The BDSM couple.
I love them. I also appreciate that Chuck is not afraid to kill off characters.
No.
But also, like, you know, he'll put some of the main characters in peril, but they'll fight it out and, like, they'll survive or whatever. Yeah. Like, it's not a case where, like, everyone's safe, but also, like, I don't know. He's also not just killing people off for shock value. Like, it's very, I feel like the character deaths that we get
made sense.
Are earned.
Yes. Yeah. Especially one towards the end. I feel like if that character got redeemed, I was going to be annoyed.
Same.
And even, like, when Summer Tragic, like, you know, there was definitely a character that was like, you could have been redeemed. Or, like, you were on your way. Come on. And then you're like,
But it's, like, earned.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do appreciate that. And, you know, something I will forever say about Chuck Wendig until he proves me wrong is that the man can write an ending. Good Lord. This is, you know, longtime listeners and visitors to the bookstore will know that if I have ever tried to hand sell you Book of Accidents, I have handed it to you while saying, if you like Stephen King but wish he could write an ending, read this. And that remains true with this one as well. Really long, complicated book with a big cast of characters, and somehow he pulls off an impeccable ending with no loose ends that I could find.
And, like, the flow's pretty good for a big book. Like,
It moves very well.
You know, I mean, paced well. I listened to it, but it was, like, a 24-hour audiobook, and I think it took me 2 days at 1.5 speed. Like, I listened to it very quickly.
Yeah.
Ryan, you'll be very, this could not make it, but I was at a party last night, and someone was talking about audiobooks, and I was like, what speed do you listen to? And he goes, oh, just one. And I was like, I was like, don't ever come to the bookstore. Like, I was like, that hurts me. I was like, I'll get up to 2.5.
Psycho behavior.
Yeah, I think I said that. I think it was like, that's like a red flag. Anyways, I was incredible. Shocked. And my other friend was like, yeah, like 1.5 maybe. And I was like, whoa. Do better, folks.
I'm willing to do 1.5 depending on the narrator.
I start at 1.5.
That's my baseline. 1.5
is where I 1.5 am usually is my hanging out. Maybe 1.7.
Yeah.
2x or higher means I'm not into just it. Trying to get through a book. Yeah.
I 1.7, 1.8 is usually where I get up to.
That's usually where, I start at 1.5. For certain narrators, I stay at 1.5 either because they already speak sort of faster than other narrators. Or I just like their voice enough. Like, Exy Sands, I'm probably never going to go 2x because I love her voice so much. I could listen to her at 1x, but I want to get through the book. So so I listen at 1.5. But then, like, other narratives, I'm like, pick it up.
Anyways, that's I just thought that was funny because I thought I'm like...
That was really funny.
Oh, gosh.
Crazy behavior.
I'm just going to start asking random customers as they come in. So anyway, do you listen to audiobooks? Great. What speed? What's the speed? Because I need to know for science things.
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Any other, like, thoughts? I mean, I loved this book.
I really liked it.
I loved it so much.
It's... Between this and Wanderers are probably my favorite. Yeah. Chuck Wendig, I really liked it. I thought it, it didn't lag for me, really. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, I thought it was well done. It feels so silly of a premise,
yeah,
but, like, it's very interesting. And I thought it, like you said, like, it, the ending felt earned.
Yeah.
And it was very sad. I was very satisfied.
Yes.
Which, you know.
Yeah.
And would you want to feel after a book that big?
Yeah. Yeah. Do I mean, yeah, like, if you've read that much, you don't want to be like, oh, well.
Yeah.
You're like,
yeah.
Yeah. And
agree.
Yeah. So, yeah, I really liked it. I bought it for a bunch of people. For
nice. Presents and... Excellent. As everyone should.
Yes. Yes.
Come buy signed copies signed for copies. All of your friends and family for the holidays. Yeah, it's funny. I kind of want to make either a display or a list or a post somewhere of horror novels that sound insane, but they're actually awesome.
Yeah.
It would be
yeah.
like this Pearl. Yeah. I don't even know what else. But just like, it's a similar like, okay, yeah. Describe the book. Okay, this one's Evil Apples. Like, and that one's a telekinetic pig.
It's just like one of those things, like, trust
Devolution.
Me.
Devolution. Devolution. Yeah. Bigfoot.
Bigfoot horror. It's great.
The man,
it's
I love great. That book.
Is, oh, my God.
It's all right. But I think there's something so fun about that, about, like, take this absurdist premise, and then it's so well done that you're like, nope, trust me.
Yeah.
Trust me, this book is awesome.
Right, like, it is a hard sell to be like,
yeah.
Okay, so you know apples.
I like.
Are you familiar with apples?
I like looking at some of the, like, official blurbs for it, where people, you know, are comparing it to, you know, they're pulling in the fairy tale aspect.
Yeah.
You know, a dark fairy tale. And I'm like, okay, that's, all right, I see you.
Yeah.
It has, like, some folk horror elements yeah. of it yeah. to it.
Good body horror.
Some good body horror.
Excellent body horror.
Yeah.
I made the mistake of having this be the book that I read during my break. Mm-hmm. Because I have, you know, I have the book I read during break, I have the book I listen to in my car, and then I have the book that I read at bedtime. Those are my three main places. And for some reason, this one I decided was going to be my break book. And the amount of times I would turn to Sam and be like, oh, God!
Yeah. I'm just like, what part are you at?
What part are you at? What part are you at? I'd be like, ah, so-and-so just took a bite of the apple and something moved. And she'd be like, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be like, have you gotten to the teeth?
Oh, God. Oh, and then, oh, God, the one character who... breaks his leg. Oh, God. I can't even... I'm not even going to say the phrase on the yeah. podcast because I don't want to gross people out, but Chuck knows. He knows the one I'm thinking of. Gross.
Gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic.
Culty.
It's very culty. We love a cult.
Yeah, love a cult. It definitely feels like small town culty. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I feel like small towns are so insular, they can become, like, cultish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Mm. Great book.
Great book.
Great book. Great event. We have signed copies. Come get them. My goal is to sell all of them. So, please come buy them.
Help Ryan manifest.
Help me. Yeah. Help me. Help me do that. Before we wrap up, I thought we could just kind of, Joe, I know you have a couple more horror novels that you wanted to mention, and I kind of just wanted to also just kind of briefly kind of do my horror wrap-up as well.
I think that's fair.
Because I've read a decent amount this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know if you want to go first, and then I'll kind of...
Sure. Yeah, so there... are a few others that I have either read recently or just really like. I read I Feed Her to the Beast and the Beast is Me by Jason Shea, and that is a YA horror. It is set at a dance school in Paris. Mm-hmm. So Suspiria vibes.
Love that.
Very great. And there are creepy ballerinas, and they're basically, the premise is that the main character desperately wants to be a member of the Paris Ballet and is willing to make a deal with
a river of blood in order to make that happen. And, you know, sometimes you have to become a monster to get what you want. And it's very, very good. I really enjoyed that one. I also read the graphic novel The Lolo Woods by Carmen Maria Machado, which is Stranger Things vibes, very much, but there's some good, like, gory illustrations, and, yeah, two girls living in a town where spooky things happen.
Okay.
So, yeah, really liking the graphic novels, lately. And then I also want to shout out The Dead Take the A Train. I haven't read it yet, but I am going to start the audiobook shortly. It's by Richard Cadry and Cassandra Kaw, and we love Cass, and I am really looking forward to it. It's very, like, gooey New York subways and magic and body horror and monsters, and I am very into that vibe.
Yeah, I'm also very excited to read that one.
Yeah. I think those are most of what I wanted to mention.
Cool. So I will rapid fire go through my end of year horror wrap up. I do have to say, I called it in January. It has remained true that my favorite book of the year continues to be How to Sell a Haunted House by Grady Hendrix.
Oh God, I can't believe that was this year.
That, like, feels forever.
That came out in January.
Oh my God.
I read it for the first time last September.
I mean, that is probably
so
part
that's
of it.
That's. And I do mean a year ago, last, like, September 2022, y'all. Yeah, it just nothing. A lot of things came very close, but nobody has unseated Pupkin yet. So, How to Sell a Haunted House by Grady Hendrix. The September House by Carissa Orlando. Incredible. Mayfly by CJ Lead, which I do believe I mentioned in the Jack of All Graves episode, but that is the book that was basically written for me. Disneyland's Elsa by day, American Psycho by night. I mean, come on, it's incredible. Also, just, we did an episode a while back where we talked about books and music and authors who do soundtracks and things, and CJ Lead has a Spotify playlist for Mayfly.
Oh.
And it's all of the Halloween music that the main character listens to, because she listens to Halloween-themed music pretty much all the time. Okay. And it's great. I have been listening to it incessantly. It's so good. Mr. Magic by Kirsten White.
Mm.
Very good. Uncanny Valley. Children's television programming gone weird. It's great. Obviously, Black River Orchard and What Kind of Mother. Gotta throw in the crab apples. Bloom by Delilah S. Dawson is gorgeous. It is such a beautiful, spooky, sapphic Hannibal style.
Shy read it and loved it.
It's so good. I got to chat with Delilah S. Dawson on the podcast, and she's amazing. Yeah, it takes twists and turns, and it's, I genuinely, like, the first half, I forgot I was reading a horror novel, and I was just like, this is such a lovely witchy romance, and then it took the horror turn, and I was like, oh, right, ah! really, really good. We were talking about horror, like, short stories earlier. Gotta shout out Spin a Black Yarn by Josh Mallerman. Really, really awesome short stories there. By the time you're listening to this, my conversation with Josh will be up, where we chatted briefly about Spin a Black Yarn, but we also talked about, like, a million other things. yeah, really fun short stories in that one. And he actually does, like, one or two. He kind of dips a toe into sci-fi in that one as well, which is really fun.
Okay, nice.
Sounds really good. Camp Damascus by Chuck Tingle. I mean, Chuck just announced.
Yes, I saw that.
He's got another horror novel coming, I think, next year. And
yeah,
I'm
2024.
So excited. I can't wait.
It's Bury Your Gaze, right?
It is. It's called Bury Your Gaze. I'm so excited. I loved Camp Damascus. I love Chuck Tingle. That one's amazing. Everything the Darkness Eats by Eric LaRocca. Mm. I mean, anything by Eric LaRocca, but I happened to read this one this year. Super, super good, super dark. Again, kind of small town horror and like weirdness and culty vibes. Very, very good. Out There Screaming.
Yeah, obviously.
Which we mentioned. Black Sheep by Rachel Harrison. I love me some Rachel Harrison. And whew, talk about cults and, oh my God, family drama and narcissists. And I love it. Religious trauma, give it to me. It's so good. She's going to be on the podcast in a few weeks.
Nice.
All Hallows, which feels like it came out forever ago, but it actually was this year, by Christopher Golden, is really, really fun Halloween vibes, which I feel like a lot of horror doesn't actually give Halloween vibes.
Yeah.
But this does. It takes place on Halloween in a small town in New England, and it's a bunch of kids versus a monster. Like, it's great.
Yeah.
The Edge of Sleep, which I talked about in the previous episode, which is really, I mean, it's a love letter to A Nightmare on Elm Street. It's don't go to sleep or this bad thing will happen, right? So it's like, in this one, there's this weird kind of, I don't know, is it a virus? Is it a curse? What's happening? But people fall asleep and then they die. In their sleep. And so the main characters have to stay awake in order to figure out what's going on, solve the thing, whatever. And so they are devolving into this, like, sleep-deprived mania and trying to keep themselves awake. And it's really intense and really good. We talked about Nestlings by Nat Cassidy. We talked about Fever House by Keith Rawson. And then also just shouting out Allison Rumfitt.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I was like, wait, I have a couple more. But yeah, L.S. and Rumfitt, Brain Worms is.
Oh. Mm. Good God.
And I'll add two.
Yeah.
Our Share of Night, Mariana Enriquez.
Yep.
Enriquez. Which is just a bananas book. It's like just one of the darkest bananas books.
Wild, so twistiest, hard to describe. David like, Bowie's in it.
David
what?
Bowie's
yes.
In it. Like,
yes.
It's like what's generational cults, the devil. I don't know what it's about, and I loved it. And then Silver Nitrate.
Nice. Yeah,
by Silvia Moreno Garcia.
I was going to mention that. I was going to mention Brain Worms, and I was going to mention The Spirit Bears Its Teeth by Andrew Joseph White. Which, yes. If you haven't read any Andrew Joseph White, you definitely should. But honestly, this one's my favorite. It's so good. Gothic,
yeah.
Spooky, trans horror, but also like deeply upsetting.
Yeah.
But great body horror. It's it's so good.
Yeah.
He does a really good job. I really like him. So, cool. Yeah. Some good horror this year.
Excellent, excellent horror this year. Yeah. So that pretty much brings our Halloween episode to a close. So I will pull up my list. And of course, obviously, if you're ever looking for horror recommendations, please come in to the bookstore and talk to us, because
what Ryan lives for.
It's literally my favorite thing that I do. I do a lot of things here, but nothing brings me so much joy as someone coming up to me and saying, hey, are you Ryan? Can you recommend some horror? Oh my God. You're mine for the next, like, hour. I'm going to talk to you so much about horror. It's the best. So, yay. Please do that. Also, just, we have a new contact within Cemetery Dance Publications, and so we're going to be starting to carry some books that are put out by Cemetery Dance, which is, I know a lot of our local horror authors are either pubbed by them or, you know, are friends with people who are pubbed by them, and there is a book coming out, I believe it's called In the Cold, Cold Ground. It's a New England horror anthology. Nice. And I think each story is from a different
New England state. So there's a New Hampshire one, there's a Massachusetts one. Yes, In the Cold, Cold Ground. It's edited by Ed Kurtz. So we are going to be carrying that among several other titles that I ordered in and I'm very excited for. So yeah, 6 authors, 6 novellas, 6 states of horror in New England. Nice. Super stoked for that. Okay. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. For a shoppable list of all the books we've discussed during this episode, you can click the link in our show notes or go to gibsonsbookstore.com/laydown-books. I'll also shout out, if you're just looking for a curated horror list, go to gibsonsbookstore.com/horror. I try to keep it fairly updated. Make sure you're following us on your favorite social media platforms. We're on most of them, and I'll put the links in the show notes. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore. Bye! Bye.